Hello, and welcome to episode 46 of Thaisy Books, news and views about Thaisy literature from the world over. I'm your host, Jenny Bart. Thank you for tuning in. In today's Thaisy Craft Chat, we have Sameer Chopra discussing his book, Bollywood Does Battle, The War Movie and the Indian Popular Imagination. In this conversation, we talked about what prompted him to write the book, how he chose the particular movies to study with closer readings, and some of the surprising and not so surprising things that he learned in the process of writing it. Sameer Chopra is a professor of philosophy at Brooklyn College of the City University of New York. He has written books on the politics of technology, the legal theory of artificial intelligence, military aviation history, which is this book, cricket, and Shyam Benegal, a renowned Bollywood movie director. He also writes for venues like The Nation, Los Angeles Review of Books, and many more. And he's a certified philosophical counselor. How do Indians look at themselves and their nation through cinematic representations of war? Bollywood Does Battle takes a closer look at certain post-independence Indian movies and their emotionally charged depictions of the country's military history. War is part of the story of the Indian nation. Its presence in India's past continues to shape the country's present and future. The 1962 China War, the 1971 Bangladesh War, and the 1999 Kargil conflict all play outsized roles in the Indian popular imagination. The book examines classics of the war movie genre: Haqeeqat, Border, Hindustan Ki Qasam, Vijeta, LOC Kargil, Lakshya, and The Ghazi Attack. These are the movies, to see what they reveal and illuminate about the relationship of the nation to war. Chopra examines how these movies establish popular Indian understanding of patriotism, militarism, and nationalism, and reinforce supposed Indian values through their cinematic representations. This is a must read for anyone interested in the relationship of Indian films to Indian culture and history. I so enjoyed this conversation with Sameer because we're both Bollywood fans. The book gives us so much food for thought, and despite its weighty topic, it's written in a very accessible and engaging manner. I revisited all these movies that he's mentioned in the book with new insights and a better understanding. Enjoy this chat, and here's Sameer now.
Hi, Sameer, and welcome to Thaisy Books and the Thaisy Craft Chat segment.
Hi, Jenny. Glad to be here.
Great. Well, I'm very excited to talk about your book, Bollywood Does Battle, because, you know, you and I have been talking about the book from even before it came out on Twitter.
That's right.
And you'd mentioned it on Twitter, and I was like, oh, that sounds interesting to me. And you said, okay, I'll send you a copy. And, you know, it took me a while to get around to finally reading it, but I'm so glad I did, because I finished it about a week or so ago, I think, and I'm still kind of mulling over some of the things in here. But the first thing I want to talk about is genesis, right? Because, I mean, I look at your background, your, you know, in the back of the book, there is an intro in about the author, and you teach philosophy at Brooklyn College, right, and you've written on politics and artificial intelligence and military aviation. And here is a book about Bollywood and war. So talk, and then there's a cricket book as well. And then there's a Satyajit Ray book as well. So I'll link to all of these, but my goodness, talk to me a little bit about how you came to writing this particular book, given your background and everything.
Well, there is, I guess, some sort of connection there. The first thing is, you know, I'm Indian, and I think there are three things that all Indians are supposedly obsessed with, which is, you know, cricket, politics, and the movies. And my ambition was to write books on all three of those subjects to do justice to my enduring obsessions. And I think I've sort of started to get to that point. The background for this movie particularly is, you know, I, if you notice in the book's dedication, I dedicate this book to my father, who was a pilot in the Indian Air Force and actually, flew and fought in two of India's wars with Pakistan. So I have, you know, that kind of familial or personal interest in matters military and military history. And, you know, I've written a couple of books, or rather co-authored a couple of books with one of India's military aviation historians. And actually it was while working on those books and while thinking about the lack of military history in India, which is kind of a puzzling feature for a country that has fought four wars in about 75 years, that there is very little military history. It's not really researched. And also I was kind of struck by how Indians think about war or talk about war as I was working on these books. That then kind of forced my attention to the ways that Indians, and I guess Indian culture, has represented the wars that it has fought. So this project was kind of just like going through my head, and I thought maybe at one time of just writing an essay or two on, you know, one or two selected movies. And then I realized that, you know, there was a kind of a time span. There was a change in Indian movies that had taken place. And, you know, the production values have changed, the aesthetic has changed. And so I thought it might be kind of fascinating to examine some representatives of this genre, which is not fully developed in Indian cinema, and to look at, you know, what it reveals about Indians and our obsessions with war and with movies. And especially now, since, you know, the Indian political climb is quite different, and when political climes change, we expect cultural productions to change. And I thought that tracking that change would be kind of interesting. It's a kind of a strange thing because a bunch of war movies have suddenly come out in the last 2 years. So I seem to have tapped into this moment where, you know, there's a bunch of new war movies coming out. I've seen two or three essays on war movies this year, by a few writers that have come out. So maybe this book has come at a good time in the sense of tapping into this mood of national introspection about the way we think about war.
I do think you're right. That I think, first of all, in general, Bollywood film criticism has changed and evolved in the last few years. I think that is a good thing. So yeah. I think how we approach movies, Bollywood movies, critically, and how we read them, as it were, has changed. So I think you're right in terms of timing. And I think that, you talk about new movies coming out. In fact, I'm not necessarily a war movie fan. I am a Bollywood fan. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that too, what you mentioned, which is why I thought that, oh, well, that your book will be interesting. So let me come to, the movies that you examine in this book. And you mention at one point that, you know, what you're doing here is a close reading, in a way, of these books. And so these movies are, they span a range of time, but obviously it's all post-independence, right? Post-colonial India. And it's the movies are, and I'm going to ask you to talk a little bit about how and why you chose these particular movies, but they are, as we said, they span different times, but they also, in a way, look at different or have other different themes. And so you've got war movie as political propaganda, you've got the war movie as a coming of age movie, you've got the patriotic or the nationalistic movie. Yeah. So the ones that kind of question in some way or another the morality of violence. So you've got all these different movies and you chose them for specific reasons. In your introduction, there is a section, I think it's page 13, page 13, where the second paragraph, if you wouldn't mind reading just that bit, where it talks about why devote critical attention to war movies as a medium through which to examine a nation in the making. If you wouldn't mind just reading that little bit out.
Thanks. Why devote critical attention to war movies as a medium through which to examine a nation in the making? Most obviously, because war is a matter of perennial, morbid, and chastening fascination, a moral catastrophe that showcases the worst and the best of a nation's politics. And war movies, as their global commercial and cultural popularity confirms, are unsurpassed vehicles for the dramatic visual representations of adventure and bravery. Even those who disdain war and are horrified by its atrocities are enthralled by the bloody spectacle of men and women locked in mortal combat. Such vivid cultural representations of military history are necessary to understand nationalist politics, to understand what role war plays in determining national destiny, because the war movie's political function is to reconcile a citizenry to war, placing war prominently in its imagination so its members can reckon themselves capable of the performances required on figurative or literal battlefields. The waging of war requires the assertion of national myths, many of which are found on reading a war movie, because war movies embody and sustain a nationalist impulse that enumerates vividly the differences between us and them that justify the use of deadly force against them. War movies provide a national catharsis, an opportunity for a nation to understand collectively the particular way in which its politics have been enacted on a battlefield to preserve or establish some national claim. They, most prominently, are propaganda vehicles which articulate a nationalist self-image and furnish answers to the question of why nations go to war, the most important question a nation and its citizenry can face and answer. By viewing a war movie then, we may understand what a nation's understandings of the wars it has waged is. Why has it fought these wars and how?
Thank you. Yes, I think that was an important, the reason I asked you to read that is so I don't have to spend time explaining to our listeners why this book even exists. Thank you for that. Now, coming to the movies themselves, and you know, you talk about reading these movies. Could you talk a little bit about, I'm not going to mention them, I'll let you talk about, you know, what specific reasons, these are all combat movies. Of course, there are other war-related movies, but these were direct combat depictions versus other movies which sort of are about war, but they're more about the human side of it. So what was the interest or, and can you talk specifically about these direct combat movies that you selected here?
Thanks. You know, Jenny, thank you for putting the focus on combat, because I think when I initially picked combat movies, it was because I was, I think, a kind of a narrowly focused military historian thinking more about combat and the way war was waged. And, you know, I'm sort of aware of all the dimensions that make for a full and rich military history. But there was a sense in which I did want to have something that would make my task a little bit more focused, so that I could actually do closer reads of the movies. I actually wanted to have a smaller set of movies rather than talk about and refer to, you know, 30, 40, 50 movies. Because, you know, there are lots of war-related movies. I didn't want to have all those war-related movies. I actually, in some sense, I like close readings. And so I would much rather do a very close read of one movie than do superficial reads of five or six movies. That was, you know, just something about to do with the number of movies I was selecting. And then as I came up with this kind of refinement, I said, well, it'll be combat movies. It'll be post-independence so that this new nation's reckoning of itself can be thought about. And then also I wanted external enemies, not, you know, for example, internal enemies, which are, you know, it's a much more complicated situation about how we understand terrorists or traitors or internal forces of dissension and so on and so forth. There's a whole genre of movies in India, which I would call, you know, the Gadar movie or, you know, the terrorist movie, which is about, you know, internal actors. So I wanted movies made in the new nation where there was a sense of this new nation making movies about itself. I wanted movies where there would be a discussion of who the external enemy was, who was the other that India was defining itself against. And I thought that combat movies, specifically because they involve men and women in uniform, very frequently have these kinds of discussions and debates, sometimes about why are we fighting this war? Who Who are we fighting against? How should we fight this war? How do we handle the dilemmas that come up when we're actually waging war? I mean, I'm a philosopher, so I'm interested in the, you know, in the moral significance of war. I'm interested in the reasons why nations go to war. And I'm interested in, you know, how nations justify war, which is, you know, the ultimate political weapon in some sense, how they justify its use. So I think those sort of desiderata were playing into my selection of the movies at hand.
Yeah, no, that does make sense. I can see why. And I haven't watched all the movies that you mentioned, but I have watched at least two or three. And to your point about, you know, the questions that come up, the dialogue between the characters about why are we fighting this war and who are we fighting against, you know, that makes a lot of sense. But these movies now, you know, the movies are Haqeeqat, Akraman, Hindustan Ki Qasam, Border, LOC Kargil, Vijeta and Lakshya. Oh, and the Ghazi attack, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, there, as we said earlier, there are different themes. As you know, as a philosopher, you were interested in looking at the morality of violence, you know, political propaganda, coming of age, all of these things. Some of these you obviously probably knew going in because you had seen these movies before. Mm-hmm. Were there, as you were writing the book or as you had started writing the book, mm-hmm. were there any new themes that jumped out to you that you hadn't considered about these movies?
Oh, thank you. I should say, and this is probably going to address the, you know, the question of how these books were written. You know, the way I'm talking about the books now seems to indicate a kind of wisdom that I had before I started writing this book. I think a lot of these themes actually emerged while I was watching these movies. You know, the project when it first started was, I'm going to get these movies and I'm going to watch them. And I'm going to watch them again and again, very closely, scene by scene. I'm going to look around at what is being depicted, what is being shown, and I'm going to try and see what's going on in them. And it was as I was reading through and, you know, watching these movies that some of these themes started to emerge for me that, oh, you know, I need to think about these, about the moral dimensions of war a bit more. I need to, you know, this justifications for war at, you know, offered in every single movie. What's up with that? Why is there so much justification of these decisions? So I think some of those developed. I think the thing that if I was to say something new coming to be, I think I was struck as a whole by two things. One is just how I think diffident and apologetic and I think maybe sentimental, you know, war movies used to be, in a sense. You know, there are certain structural reasons for it. The Indian government didn't allow, enemies, so-called enemies, to be named and shamed in war movies. It was a kind of a foreign policy decision. So Indian directors, would talk about the other, but not so directly. That restriction was lifted in the 1990s, and you know, the tenor and mood of Indian movies changed quite dramatically. And the other thing that I think hit me as I was watching these movies is that, you know, there's a way in which the technical content of the movies has changed, the finish and production has changed, a lot of the sentimentalism still obtains. And, you know, I think that says something about what abides and endures even as a kind of, you know, even as the technical polish grows. And I think I was also, you know, I think I had a lot of difficulty in slotting these movies together. I didn't know which categories to put them into. I didn't know whether to proceed in a straight chronological fashion, but then I thought it would be best to work on particular themes. But I did have to set some movies apart. For example, I think Haqeeqat kind of stands alone. It was a pioneer of its time in the 1960s. And you know, the Ghazi attack, which I placed at the end of the book, also stands alone because it is, you know, it's about the 71 war, but it's underwater. It's kind of a submarine movie. So it has a kind of a different orientation and flavor than some of the other movies in this book.
Yeah. I could see how you, I mean, I didn't, I loved how you grouped the movies and the themes, and I'm glad you explained how that evolved, because I thought, oh wow, he kind of had a real structure going in, but it sounds like the structure also evolved.
Yes, very much so, very much so.
Now, you know, in as I was reading, and I, you know, the as you do a close reading of each of these movies, you get into some of the tropes and the iconography.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe for the benefit of our readers who may not have read the book yet, can you maybe just talk a little bit about maybe, you know, two or three of the usual tropes and some of the iconography that we usually find in these movies, and then maybe one or two of the unexpected or unusual ones that perhaps jumped out to you as you were kind of, again, revisiting these, you know, for the book?
Right. Well, I think, you know, I do make a great deal of tropes and iconography because I did want to show that there was a certain sort of what you could call cross-cultural commonality and understanding of the war movie as it seems to span across cultures. And this is definitely true of something that, you know, a film scholar that I quoted in the book, Jeanine Bassinger, she talks about, you know, the so-called trope of the combat group, right? Which is, you know, a kind of an interesting masculine notion of a bunch of men going off to do something dangerous. And, you know, they're kind of on their own. And so this trope gets developed, you know, the group is always diverse. It has a leader. Certain members of it will die. There will be certain kinds of combat. Somebody will get wounded and he will demand to be left behind so that he can save his group. There are certain kinds of conflicts with authority that happen in the group. You know, there are these, you know, for example, there is the mail call where letters arrive from home and soldiers read these letters, which shows contact with the home front. There are certain kinds of combat scenes, you know, which, for example, typically there's always some kind of final objective that has to be overcome at great cost against overwhelming odds. These are quite standard tropes of war movies. And in fact, the combat movie is even more trope laden. And, you know, this is quite similar to, you know, other genres like, say, you know, bank robbery movies or, you know, within the Indian context, for example, I cite, you know, for example, the Dacoit movie or, you know, the Daku movie, which always has this kind of, you know, this stark, austere kind of landscape, which is supposed to remind people of the Chambal Valley. And there are these men always who are walking around with these bandooks and, you know, these belts of bullets, and they have these handlebar mustaches. And, you know, there's a damsel who has ghungroos on her legs, and there's the corrupt, you know, inefficient police force. They're the scared villagers. These are all kind of tropes of the Dacoit movie. And I think if you watch war movies, you will see many recurring tropes that occur in the context of the war movie. You know, I thought some tropes were going to be unique to the Indian war movie. For example, I thought that, you know, songs would be unique to the Indian war movie. But in fact, I found out that quite a few World War II combat films made by Hollywood had songs in them, you know, of soldiers singing songs at night to keep themselves entertained and awake, or soldiers singing rousing songs to, you know, inspire themselves as they go into war. I would say, you know, the Indian war movie has, you know, some distinctive features. I mean, you know, for example, some Indian filmmakers try to marry the kind of masala formula of, you know, romance, love, and songs, along with the Indian, you know, with the war film tropes. So you get a curious hybrid of that. There is a great deal of emphasis on the family, on relationships with mothers, wives. There is, you know, for example, there are certain things that happen in Hollywood war movies that don't happen in Indian war movies. For example, there's, you know, there's very little, you know, ethnic humor or joking. When there is, it is almost invariably respectful. For instance, you know, Sikhs are to be valorized in Indian war movies and not made fun of, for instance. So I think what was interesting, of course, was some of these cross-cultural similarities with Hollywood war movies. And then, of course, this kind of distinctive signatures that, you know, that Indian war movies have. They're much more, I would say, you know, sincere, or I would say they would like to be much more sincere or sentimental in their treatment of war. I was struck by, you know, by the change in the way that the 71 war was, for example, treated, but, you know, we can talk about that later. I did want to say that one of the tropes that I think comes across, which I think is transferred into, which I think is also is common between Hollywood and Bollywood movies, is the strong emphasis on, say, masculine friendships. You know, men are united by war. Mm-hmm. Men are, you know, men are joined together by war. They make their best friendships in times of war. And I think all of that comes through in, you know, in these movies as well. You know, cast, of course, in the particularly Indian understanding of friendship.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the whole, it is the war movie, the Bollywood war movie is definitely very much a male-dominated enterprise.
Very much so. Yeah. You know, I actually missed out on a movie that just came out about the woman pilot who flew in the Kargil War. And that would have been an interesting addition to the coming of age section of movies.
Was that Gunjan Saxena or something like that?
Yes, yes, yeah. I actually really, when that movie came out, I was like, oh man, that would have been awesome, because then I could have actually had one where there was a woman character.
Right. Yeah. You know, I didn't even think of that. I haven't seen the movie, but I know of it.
Yeah,
that would have been good. And, you know, speaking of, so that a new movie about Kargil is just out in August, right? Sher Shah. I haven't seen it yet. Have you?
No, I haven't seen it. You know, I'm on a little WhatsApp group chat, you know, with a bunch of other military aviation nerds. And they were all kind of, you know, dissing the movie and saying how bad it was. And I was like, well, I think for reasons of completeness, I need to watch it.
Yeah, I think you should. I mean, and now that I've read your book, I just want to watch it from more of a like a an academic exercise in because I want to look for those tropes and
very much everything. So I was hoping, in fact, that once people read this book, that they would have a kind of interesting guide at hand which would help them interpret the movies that are now coming out as well.
Right, and I would hope that, you know, the folks in Bollywood who want to make a different kind of war movie, I hope that they'll pick this book up and say, you know what, how do we write a different kind of war movie? I hope a woman script writer picks it up, you know, and says,
I had tried to get my book to the attention of Anupama Chopra, who is, you know, a big writer.
Right, big film critic. Yeah.
A big film critic. And in fact, she's actually a Bollywood insider, because she's married to a director and producer, I think. But, you know, maybe one day when she's strolling around in Mumbai, she'll pick up this book at some bookstore.
But you know who you should give this book to? Just, I mean, I'm digressing a little. Mm-hmm. But you know who would be great? Anupama's brother, Vikram Chandra.
Oh.
He's a writer. He's a professor at a university. You guys should connect.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, thank you for that tip. I will definitely look him up.
You know, I interviewed him for a Jaipur Literary Festival panel. I'm happy to send him a quick note and say, you know, you might want to check out this book by Sameer Chopra.
That would be very kind of you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. It just struck me when you mentioned Anupama Chopra. I hadn't even thought of it, but now that you mentioned her name, I was like, oh my gosh, Vikram would be perfect for this. You know, he might like the book.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay. So, yeah. So, I'll be curious to know. I know you're not on social media anymore or something, but I'm curious, once you watch Sher Shah, I'm curious to know what you think of it now that I've kind of read some of your close readings of this.
Sure.
So let me talk. I have a few more quick questions. What, you know, you talk about how this book has evolved, right? And the book evolved, and through the writing of it, you discovered certain themes and how you wanted to organize the book. Tell me about, one, what was the most surprising thing you discovered in the process of writing the book? And two, what was the most challenging thing about writing this book?
I'll answer the second question first. The challenging part for me, frankly speaking, and this is going to sound quite strange, is that I don't think that at least half of these movies are good movies. They're not, I would say, outstanding examples of cinema. So I think it was difficult for me to watch them again and again. That's, you know, because I have to read the text. And, you know, there's a kind of a frustration you have, because you think that, well, you know, this story could be told better. There's certain clumsinesses on display. I that's a kind of a superficial difficulty. But I think as I wrote on, I think one challenging aspect I had was, I am an Indian-American writer who lives in the US. I have not lived in India for the past 34 years. I've traveled frequently to India, but I am not, you know, I would say, ensconced in India or its current preoccupations in ways that I could be. And I think I was often worried about, is there some way in which I am going to misread these movies, or I am, you know, or I'm out of touch, or I have in some ways failed to find some kind of connection that in fact these movies have with, you know, the people who watch them and enjoy them. And I think that, I think I had that little bit of discomfort about myself. You know, I'm kind of writing on these from a distance, you know, I do feel, you know, I felt like I could claim, make certain claims of authenticity for myself because of, you know, my father's military service and my writing on military history. But I was still, you know, quite unsure about whether I was in the right place to write these things. I think to go to your first question, what the most surprising thing was, I think I was surprised right at the very get-go at how few movies there were. And I think I'm surprised overall, but I think that sense of surprise went away when I realized that we don't have a great tradition of military history, which I think has a great deal to do with just that we have this reluctance to examine certain aspects of our history. And I was struck by how narrowly focused as a result these movies were, that they didn't, you know, if you read the last chapter, there's all these lacunae that I point out, you know, about certain dimensions of war that are missing. For example, you know, the disillusionment of soldiers with war, or the, or, you know, the problems that nations have in fighting war themselves. So there was
PTSD.
A sense of
PTSD.
Yeah. PTSD, conflict with officers, you know, the problems that soldiers have when they return. I mean, PTSD being one of them, but, you know, rehab is another one. So I think there's a sense in which, wow, these movies are quite narrowly focused. I mean, you know, there were a couple of movies that I dropped from my list, you know, just because I just felt like, yeah, they weren't going to actually say anything that interesting about war, even though they were ostensibly about war.
Oh, what were those movies?
Well, and I think both of them I was able to drop because of my restriction on post-independence movies. I mean, one was Lalkar, which is Dharmendra and Rajendra Kumar, which is set in pre-independence India. It's a kind of a Second World War movie. Mm. And then there is Hum Dono, which is, you know, Devanand playing this double role, which is also a Second World War movie. And then there is... then there was a movie, I think, set in the 1960s, which if I'm, God, I forgot. It's a Devanand movie. And I think it's the only movie about the 65 war. It's about this guy who is, I think he's court-martialed in the 65 war for cowardice, but then is redeemed in the 71 war or something like that. Mm-hmm. But again, I didn't find its treatment direct enough about war, you know, for me to warrant selecting it.
I think to your point, I mean, that war has been used, obviously there's these direct combat movies, but war as a plot point or as a literary device has been used in a lot of Bollywood movies. I'm thinking of just movies like, for example, recently Razi, or you've got, you know, the older movies like Silsila, where you've got, you know, Squadron Leader.
Yes, yes. Right? Sure. Or even Aradhana. Right?
Aradhana, Sangam with Raj Kapoor.
Yeah, exactly. Know,
so that, I mean, I was going through these in my head as I was reading, and I was thinking, well, in some oblique way or another, Bollywood has brought out or described war, I guess, but they don't always approach it head on as a combat movie.
Yes.
And perhaps to your point, the reason there are so few combat movies, I mean, one could be because of budget. I mean, I imagine the budget for these movies is huge. The two, but also, you know, I mean, it doesn't give you that family entertainment. And, you know, a lot of Bollywood movies are designed so that not so much anymore, but at least when I was growing up, they were so that the whole family could sit together and there was something for everyone, right?
Yes, yes, exactly.
And you can't maybe do that so much with a war movie, a direct combat movie, I guess. That's one reason, right?
Yeah. I suspect the budget issues are not so important now.
Not now,
because I think they just spend a large percentage of their budget on star salaries and on other aspects like song production, choreography, and they just don't have that much money left over for special effects.
Yeah.
But You know, I mean, it's not as if people would not like it. As I said, you know, in my fan chapter, Indian audiences regularly will take dubbed action movies and they will turn them into blockbuster hits.
And I mean, the Hollywood war movie does well in India, well enough, right? So
Yes, definitely.
Okay, so moving to my next question. I mean, you've already sort of answered at the top, you know, what you hope readers will take away from the book. And obviously, you know, your closing chapter also talks about this, but maybe again, for the listeners here who may not have read your book yet, what do you hope that a reader might take away? And let's assume, you know, this is a reader like me who has an interest in Bollywood, you know, isn't necessarily a Bollywood insider or even a war expert, but, you know, just an average reader. What would you hope for an average reader to take away from this book?
I think I would say that for the average reader, once, you know, the average reader reads a reading of a movie, I hope they see movies, war movies in particular, but, you know, I think just movies in general differently, so that when they go there, they pay more attention to what is on the screen. And I think they pay more attention to directorial choices. Why are particular characters shown in particular kinds of antagonistic stances? Why is the story being told in this particular way? Why are there certain choices about how to depict certain kinds of things? Why is there a cutout here? Why is this shown and this not shown? And I think when I first started reading serious film criticism, and I don't mean, you know, film theory, which is, I think, can be quite esoteric, frankly speaking, but I think just serious, good film criticism, which is written by people who are really interested in movies. And I'd like to think I am a movie lover, and I pay very close attention to movies. I pay very close attention to what happens on the screen. And I think that taste was refined by my reading people who said that you can read movies more carefully and get more out of them. And I think that for a long time had furnished this ambition in my mind that I want to be able to do such a close reading. So I think that what I would like readers of this book to do is that once they read this book, I hope that any movie they watch will be informed by a sense of like, wow, this movie is a kind of a cultural document. This movie is representative of its time. This movie, if it was stored in a time capsule, would reveal something to Martians of what our preoccupations, anxieties, and concerns were at a particular time in history, at a particular cultural moment. And I think once we can see movies as that, they become richer texts, they become richer kinds of cultural markers. And I think we find our own enhancement of movies, our own understanding of movies enhanced as we watch cinema from that point on.
Yeah, I feel the same way with books, right? A book is a cultural artifact. How we engage with it, how we approach it as a cultural artifact enriches our experience of it. And I hear what you're saying similarly with a movie, how you engage with and approach the movie changes your experience of it. So let me ask you an interesting question then. Interesting, I say, because I'm curious to know your answer. Mm-hmm. Given your study of these particular movies and other war movies in Bollywood, give me your ideal war movie. What would be the setting? Which particular war? And what would be the basic plot, let's say? Who would be in it? Just go to town. If time, money, and all these things were no restrictions, what would be your ideal war movie in Bollywood?
Well, I should qualify my answer right off the bat with a personal comment, which is that I told you my father fought in these wars, but I lost my father at a very early age as well. Not in the wars. He died at an early age following his retirement from the Air Force. So in some sense, I would say, without turning this into a psychotherapy session, that in writing military history, in writing war movie books, there's a way in which I'm kind of, you know, trying to find my father in some ways. So I would say if I was going to make a war movie, I would make a war movie that was about the Air Force. I would make the war movie about the 1971 war in which my father fought. I would provide, I think, an acute introduction to the movie. The section of the movie would say something about the crisis of partition and the creation of Pakistan and Bangladesh. I think it would say something about the political situation that led to such a war taking place. If I have a political agenda in this book, I think some of that will come out in that movie. For example, I would like some attention to be paid to the genocide in Bangladesh that West Pakistan perpetrated on East Pakistan, which I think has huge, I think, political and moral significance, but which has not been adequately studied. In fact, I've actually talked to many genocide scholars about how the genocide in Bangladesh is completely ignored by genocide scholars. And I wonder why that is. So I would like, the war movie that I would like to make would be one in which that genocide is explored. My father was deeply uncomfortable with war. He was very uncomfortable with the 1965 war. And this was something that my aunt told me. So I would like moral debates in this movie. The Bangladesh war is a very interesting war because just war theorists and scholars have often described it as a just war. It's the war that makes me feel comfortable about my father's role in it, that my father fought the right kind of war. And obviously, you know, if the movie was to be made, there would be combat in it. I'm an aviation buff, so they would be accurate, technically accurate air combat. There would be the challenges that pilots face. And then there would be some depictions of, for example, the Indian Army's entry into Dhaka, and you know, the signing of the surrender documents and so on and so forth. So in some sense, it would be a history of the Bangladesh War, but one which would pay adequate attention to the historical and moral context, and one which, by placing certain figures at its core, I think would assuage my lifelong quest to find my missing father as well.
Oh, that's, yeah, I didn't know that's where you would go, but I mean, I think I can totally see why, and I can totally understand. So yes, the Bangladesh War. In my case, I mean, you probably know because I've written a whole scroll listicle or something about it. World War One and Two, I think the way that the Western world goes on about World War One and Two, both in books and movies, and completely whitewashes India's role, that really rankles me. So I mean, you know, for me, I don't have skin in the game, as in none of my parents were directly involved in the war, clearly, but I have other family members who were impacted by World War One and Two. And
yes. You know, I think, you know, Jenny, thank you for reminding me of that, because honestly, just now when I'm thinking of those stories, I think a really amazing story could be, a really amazing movie could be told that would tell the story of one of these soldiers who were just, you know, picked up from their villages and transported to Flanders, to Ypres, you know, to the Somme. And they fought in these battles, you know, where we commemorate the loss of, you know, English, French, German lives. And right, we never talk about the Indians who lost their
exactly
lives.
I mean, it rankled me so much when Dunkirk came out. And I remember, you know, all of, you know, Bollywood, socially active, you know, social media active people were all out there talking about, oh, you know, the whitewashing. And I'm like, yeah, but you're in Bollywood. Why don't you make a movie then?
Exactly. Yeah, right. I think absolutely, I 100% agree with that. I think there are great scripts and great stories to be told there. I think, for example, there are a couple of books that have come out recently which have talked about the colonial Indian Army.
I mean, there's a whole slew of books. There is actually a whole slew of books, nonfiction. So I think, for example, like Raghu Karnad's memoir, The Far Field. I mean, that should be a movie. Somebody should make that movie.
I think you would get such a fascinating examination of, you know, Indian nationalism, Indian interactions with, you know, with colonial entities. You would, and I think honestly, if you paid attention not just to the lives of the officers, you know, the guys who came from public schools and went and got educated at Sandhurst and who were, you know, very typical Pakka, you know, almost, you know, Brown Sahib officers, I think I would like movies made about the Jats and the Sikhs and the Gujars and the Pans. These people who came from villages, who couldn't even eat the food that was given to them, who went off into these cold, freezing lands, who couldn't even write letters home. And these fucking colonial, pardon my language.
And they could barely speak, they couldn't speak the language, and they had to deal with all of that. And you know, when I think of popular culture, and I think of Indian person in the world wars, the only thing that comes to mind is Kip in The English Patient. Yeah. Michael Ondaatje as English. I mean, that's the one that everybody knows. Oh yeah, that guy, Naveen Andrews, played that character in The English Patient, you know, and he was not even a main character. So there you go. Yeah. Anyways, all right. Okay, so what's next for you book-wise? I know you've got two more books going on, right? Well, you had the cricket book come out, and I'll link to that. You've got a new book now about Satyajit Ray. Tell us about that.
Oh, that's on Shyam Benegal. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. I apologize. My bad.
That's okay. That's actually a more academic book. It's more academic in the sense that it's, you know, there's a series coming out with Bloomsbury, which it's out actually. It's called Philosophical Filmmakers. And, you know, I was approached by the editor to write one of the titles in the series. And he asked me, which director would you like to write on? And, you know, like the typical, you know, graduates, you know, I don't know, the old cinema nerd, I said, oh, I want to write on Fellini or Kurosawa, one of these typical, you know, the things that all cinemaphiles love. And he goes, why don't you write a movie about it? Why don't you write a book about an Indian director? And at first I was a little offended, you know, like, why are you shoving me into the fucking Indian ghetto? But then I thought, you know, wait a second, who's going to write movies about books about Indian directors if not, you know, people like me? And so first I thought I would write a book on Adoor Gopalakrishnan, the Malayali film director. But then I realized I would be severely handicapped because his movies are in Malayalam and I would be, you know, watching subtitles. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, that is, I'm not going to do that. And then I thought, well, everybody has written books on Satyajit Ray. He's the only Indian director that people seem to have heard of. Mm-hmm. And I said, Benegal is someone who has got such a rich and fascinating oeuvre of work.
Yes.
And he's someone I would like to bring, you know, more to people's attention. And, you know, Jenny, it was amazing. I would go to these academic parties and, you know, these wine and cheeses, and people would ask me, and I would say, I'm writing a book on movies. I said, what are you writing on? I would say, oh, philosophical filmmakers. And, you know, they would expect that I was going to say something like, oh, you know, I'm writing a book about Truffaut or Fellini or, you know, one of these guys. And I said, no, I'm writing a book on Benegal. And they were like, who's Benegal? I'm like, yeah, well, why don't you read my book when it comes out?
Right.
You know? And it was fascinating. You know, I had wanted to write a book about him. I consider myself, you know, someone who is fascinated by his treatment of women in the movies. Mm-hmm. And I think what I have done, if I may so, I'm quite proud of it, is that I have pegged him as a feminist director, and I've shown why his movies are feminist. And in fact, he's not just a feminist. He is an intersectional feminist. And I think that this comes out really well in his movies if they are, you know, if they're read closely. And, you know, I think he's been described as a feminist director by, you know, by feminist philosophers. So I'm not saying something new there. But I think the reading I provide of his movies is, I think, quite, makes that case quite strongly as well. And as I said,
is it out already now, that this book?
Yes, it is out with Bloomsbury. It, you know, all these three books came out the same year, which is a little embarrassing because, you know, I don't know, people thought I was writing them in months or something. But, you know, they've just all been in the works at different periods of time, and they just went across the finish line this year.
Right.
So yeah, that is our.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at. I just picked out the table of contents for this book, the Benegal book, and these are all my favorite movies. I've seen them all: Ankur, Nishant, Manthan, Bhumika, Mandi. Oh my gosh, I gotta get this book.
Oh, all right. I would. You know, Jenny, if you got that book and you wanted to talk to me about it, I'd be psyched to do that.
I think, yes, please, let's do that. I'm going to have you on again. Kaliyug, Junoon, I have the DVDs. I have not seen, Kondura, I have not seen that one.
Okay, that's a fascinating movie. That's a fascinating movie.
And, all the others I've seen, though, but I haven't seen that one. So I'll have to watch that and read your book. That's great. So thank you. That was, I'm glad we discussed this book as well a little bit. And I'd love to have you back on to talk about this particular book. And so with that, let me close with my usual question, which is, what is your favorite Desi book and why?
Oh, boy. All right.
Well, I mean, favorite is tough, I know. So maybe it's one of your recent Desi book that you read and really enjoyed, you know, because favorite is a hard one. There's no
actually,
one.
Let me try and address the favorite bit in a sense, because I will just talk about a movie, talk about a book that I read a very long time ago, but which had a huge impact on me. and I can pick that out. The Indian essayist and writer Mukul Kesavan, who you know of him. I mean, he's a very accomplished writer. He's only written one novel in his life, and it's called Looking Through Glass. I think it's called Looking Through Glass. In my opinion, it's the best partition novel.
Really interesting. Yeah. Okay, I haven't read that book. I've read his columns, but I haven't, and I didn't even know it was a partition novel.
Yeah, it is a fantastic partition novel. It is, and I say fantastic in the literal sense of the word, because the central character falls out of a train in modern India and wakes up in pre-partition India. And then he has to find his way through this land that is being torn apart as independence comes. And, you know, it was the most nuanced treatment of partition. It was about the country falling apart. It wasn't this usual tales of murder and rape and hackery. And it was, you know, it was fantastic. And I read that book 24 years ago. I read it when I was alone and broke and struggling to get through grad school. And I read it at night in my Lower East Side apartment. I was very lonely, very, very, very at sea. And it was, you know, it made me tremendously homesick. It was so evocative of Delhi, of, you know, of its neighborhoods and the Purana Kila. And it was just, you know, and I was very much taken back. I don't read very much Indian fiction. I can't remember when the last time I read Indian fiction was. But that movie, that book impressed me tremendously. I made contact with Mukul later on, and, you know, we became sorts of friends and acquaintances, and he wrote a very kind foreword for my cricket book. And I will say real quickly, the two other Indian books that I really enjoyed, one was, and they're both about cities, and you probably have read both of them. You know, one is Maximum City by Suketu Mehta. And then the other one is Capital by Rana Dasgupta, who is, you know, I guess an Englishman. But I guess a Desi Englishman. But both of them were fascinating to me because they were movies, or they were books about Indian cities. Delhi, of course, you know, is a city that I consider my own in some ways. But yeah, they were fascinating because I think they brought alive those cities in multi-dimensional ways, and in ways that connected them to much larger preoccupations that any citizen of the world would have, that is concerned about where our world is going. So they were Indian and they were cosmopolitan in that acute sense. And I would say Mukul's novel remains for me, I think, the best novel that I've read in a very long time.
Excellent. I'm glad you mentioned that book, because I love to find new books, especially on topics that, you know, have been written a lot about, like the partition. So I'm definitely going to check that out. So thank you for that, Samir. And I thoroughly enjoyed reading this book, as well as this conversation with you. And I look forward to reading the Benegal book and having another conversation at some point about
that. Thank you very much. And I don't know how much of a cricket fan you are, but you should read my cricket memoir, my cricket fan memoir, if it's of any interest to you.
Yeah, you know, cricket is not, I'm not a huge cricket fan, but then again, as you said, it's a memoir. It's not exactly an academic book on cricket.
Yes, that's right. It is published as part of this series at Temple University Press that's about, you know, sport understood as a kind of, or sports writing as a kind of, you know, as a kind of a cultural history. So it's kind of tracking this change in me from being a self-hating Indian to being, to being an Indian that glories in the triumphs of the Indian team as I live overseas. So it kind of tracks that change.
Interesting. Okay, I'll have to check that out too. Well, thank you very much, Samir. This has been very interesting, enlightening, and fun conversation. I enjoyed it. And I look forward to more such conversations and more books from you.
Thank you very much, Jenny. And thanks very much for taking the time and effort to read the book, for setting this up. And like I said before, for all the work you're doing at Desi Books, it's really fantastic. And I'm actually really psyched to be on this thing. Once the recording comes out, I'm definitely going to be sharing it with all my friends.
You've been listening to episode 46 of Desi Books. News and views about Desi literature from the world over. I'm your host, Jenny Bart. Thank you for tuning in. Today's Desi Craft Chat was with Samir Chopra discussing his book, Bollywood Does Battle, The War Movie and the Indian Popular Imagination. Episode 47 will be up shortly. Follow on Twitter at Desi Books, Instagram at Desi.books, Facebook at Desi Books FB. Tag the accounts if you have requests or suggestions. And please go to the website if you'd like to sign up for the free weekly newsletter. That's desibooks.co. Stay healthy, keep reading, and write well.